Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's Women's History Month presentation at the Ohio State House. My name is Dana Jelkin, and I'm the Deputy Director of Museum and Education here for the Capitol Square Review and Advisory Board. And on behalf of everyone here at CSRIB, we're so glad that you could be here for our final presentation of the month. So before we begin, I'd like to give a couple of quick shout-outs. Please welcome Portsmouth West High School for joining us here today. And also a huge thank you to our AV team, Josh, who has set up the sound system that we'll be using today so that we can all hear the wonderful music that we're going to be listening to. Much thanks also to the Ohio Channel for live streaming today's performance. It will also be available on the Ohio Channel's website, so if you should want to go back and watch the performance again, that will also be available on their website. And thank you to Katie Montgomery, our Education and Collections Manager, for setting up all of our presentations and working with all of our presenters both last month and this month for Women's History Month as well. At the conclusion of today's presentation, Katie and I will come around the audience with microphones, so if you do have any questions, please hold on to those at the end, and we'll make sure that we get those for you. It is now my pleasure to introduce today's presenters, Steve and Lisa Ball. Columbus natives, Steve and Lisa, are passionate about sharing the history and music of the Civil War era. With over 20 years of research and performance experience, they bring authenticity to their presentations using period-correct instruments and attire. Descendants of Union Army soldiers, the Balls have entertained audiences at various historical venues. They will also be participating in the Ohio State House's Civil War encampment on April 29th from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. That will take place here at the State House. If the weather is nice, it will be outside. If the weather is inclement, it will be here in the atrium. And that will be alongside other such activities, such as the Repose of Lincoln and cannon firings. So without further ado, please welcome Steve and Lisa as they present the music of the women of the Civil War.
Thank you, Dana. It's wonderful to be back at the State House. I've had the opportunity to play here a handful of times, and it's always been a wonderful experience. And we want to thank Katie, Mike, Josh, and everybody from the Ohio Channel for all the help they gave us in getting set up for today's program. We have several different programs on the music of the American Civil War. Today we are going to talk about the songs that were either written by, influenced by, or performed by women during this particular period of time. The women's movement began in this country in earnest in 1848 in Seneca Falls, New York. It spread very quickly across the country. Women's conventions became popular in the 1850s, and music began to change as well. You saw more and more American songs with women's names in the title. More and more songs were inspired by women as well. And we kind of hooked onto that and realized how many songs actually had a very powerful connection to the girls of the 1850s and 1860s, and we just decided to go ahead and kind of put this together in a program. We're going to kick things off today with a song. We've got several songs from the great state of Ohio. Of course, we're Buckeye born and bred, and we love to be here. But we're going to do several songs from the state of Ohio. The first one has got a very powerful and close by Columbus connection. This song was written by a young man by the name of Benjamin Russell Hanby, who was born in Rushville, Ohio in 1833. Rushville was an important stop on the Underground Railroad. When Benjamin was 9 years old in 1842, an escaped slave from the state of Kentucky by the name of Joe Selby would arrive in Rushville in the dead of winter, suffering from exposure. Joe had escaped from a plantation in Kentucky, and as the residents of Rushville began to nurse him back to health, he told them his story. He had been given permission to marry another slave on the plantation. Her name was Nellie Gray. Just before their wedding date, Nellie was sold at a slave auction and taken to Georgia in chains. Joe knew that if he could escape, get across the state of Ohio, and reach Canada, he could live there as a free man. He could get a job. He could make enough money to go to Georgia, find Nellie, buy her freedom, and they could have the life they envisioned together. Joe died 3 days after reaching Rushville. He is buried there in Pleasant Hill Cemetery. 9-year-old Benjamin never forgot that story. In 1851, the Hanby family relocated to Westerville, Ohio. Benjamin attended Otterbein. After he graduated, he traveled to Kentucky. He saw a slave auction with his own eyes, and he remembered the story of Joe and Nellie. By this time, he had become a very accomplished musician. When he returned to Westerville, he sat down and wrote a song called Darling Nellie Gray that would very quickly become one of the most powerful anti-slavery anthems written before the American Civil War. Abolitionists tried for nearly 30 years to find Nellie, and they were never successful. Her father showed up in Westerville in 1876. He is buried in the Otterbein Cemetery, but he had no proof of where Nellie wound up. He never heard from her again. Benjamin Hanby went on. His biggest hit was a song called Up on the Housetop that he wrote in 1864. He passed away in 1867. He is buried in the Otterbein Cemetery, just a few blocks from the house where he wrote Darling Nellie Gray. Today it stands at 160 West Main Street, Westerville, Ohio, operated by the Ohio History Connection. Lisa and I have had the opportunity to play this song right in the room where it was written, right beside the desk it was written on, many, many times. So we're gonna kick things off with a great Ohio tune called Darling Nellie Gray. There's a low green valley by the old Kentucky shore where I've whiled many happy hours away. Sitting and a-singing by that little cabin door where lived my darling Nellie Gray. Oh, my poor Nellie Gray, they have taken you away. I'll never see my darling anymore. I'm sitting I went to see her, she's gone, the neighbors say. The white man has wrapped her in his chains. They've taken her to Georgia to toil her life away as she works in the cotton and the cane. Oh, my poor Nellie Gray, they have taken you away. I'll never see my darling anymore. I'm sitting by the closer to the American Civil War. This next song was written in New York City by a young man from Cincinnati by the name of William Fosdick. Fosdick was born in 1825 into a fairly wealthy family. He attended Transylvania University, became an attorney, and in 1851 found himself in New York City as the partner of a law firm there. But he spent most of his time rather in the courtroom. He wrote short stories, poetry, and lyrics for songs. By 1856, he was a published author. In 1859, the law firm got a new partner with a lovely wife with pretty blonde hair. Her name was Ora Lee. So he wrote her a poem, and that poem was set to music by he and a friend. The song became popular in New York. It traveled up the Hudson River to West Point, and it very quickly became a favorite of the cadets and the faculty at West Point, the United States Military Academy. West Point was torn in two when the Civil War began. A large number of both students and professors, faculty, traveled south to serve in the Confederate Army. And as a result, Ora Lee would become a very popular love song written at the outbreak of the war, enjoyed by both armies. In 1955, Ora Lee actually enjoyed kind of a rebirth as a guy from Memphis, Tennessee made his first movie. His name was Elvis Presley, and he made a movie called Love Me Tender. And we don't really need to go into detail about that movie. If you've ever seen it, it's absolutely awful. But Elvis's older brother was a Union or a Confederate soldier being chased by the Union Army, so it had a ridiculous Civil War theme to it. But the producers wanted an actual Civil War song in it, so they chose William Fosdick's Ora Lee to play in the background. A Hollywood songwriter took the melody, changed the words, turned it into Love Me Tender, and gave the King of Rock and Roll his second number one hit. So when we ask people, what's your favorite Civil War song, and they look at us like we've lost our minds, we say, well, if you've heard Elvis sing Love Me Tender, you sort of know at least one Civil War song. This is the way it was written in 1860, and this isn't the way the king did it, but a lovely, lovely love song from the beginning of the war.
Blackbird in the spring on the willow tree sat and rocked. I heard him sing, singing orally, 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 made of golden hair. Sunshine came along with thee and swallows in the air.
Thank you. Or should I say, thank you very much.
He can't help himself.
You don't get to do that very often in this particular genre of music, so you take your opportunities when you get them. As we move into the American Civil War, it starts in earnest on April 12, 1861. We have the first battle of Bull Run. In the summer of 1861, Lincoln calls for 300,000 volunteers. To raise an army, he realizes now he has a full-blown war on his hands. September, George McClellan has been appointed the commander of the Army of the Potomac. George was a West Point graduate, a railroad executive when the war began. He is placed in command of the largest army in the United States, nearly 120,000 soldiers. McClellan has beautiful tailor-made uniforms, he rides a beautiful horse, he has grand reviews, and he does absolutely no fighting. Lincoln is not impressed. But at the same time, McClellan also had a very canned, regular statement to the press. He would be interviewed by a reporter. They'd say, "General, how's the war going?" And McClellan would say, "All quiet along the Potomac and just keep right on moving." A young lady by the name of Ethel Lynn Beers, who was born in Goshen, New York in 1827. At the age of 19, she married a gentleman by the name of William Beers. She became a very well-known author, poet, songwriter, lyricist, and by the time the Civil War came around, a lot of her work had been published in periodicals. She was fairly well known in the writer's circle in the United States. But Ethel was reading the newspaper in September of 1861, and they interviewed George McClellan. He gave his canned response, "All quiet along the Potomac." Right beside that was an article about a young Union private. He was shot and killed by a Confederate sniper on a bright moonlit night along the Potomac River. Didn't give his name, didn't say where he is from, but it did mention that no officers got hurt and there was no kind of a battle. And she was absolutely appalled at how quickly these anonymous men were being killed. They weren't giving any information about who they were, where they came from, their background. She wrote a poem all about this young man, and she called it The Picket Guard. And in The Picket Guard, she gives him a wife, two children. He's walking his beat along the Potomac on a beautiful, bright, moonlit night. And of course, that was the same way it was the night they took their wedding vows. He's thinking of his wife and children. He walks out into the moonlight, and in the last verse, he meets his fate. That poem was printed November 30th, 1861 in Harper's Weekly magazine. The poem became very popular because people getting shot along the Potomac at that time was a very popular pastime during the war. In late 1862, a Confederate private by the name of Lamar Fontaine walked up to a very well-known songwriter and performer by the name of John Hill Hewitt. And he said, "Here's a poem I wrote while I was on guard duty in Virginia. Why don't we set it to music and turn it into a song?" And they did. They called it "All Quiet Along the Potomac Tonight," and it became one of the biggest hits of the American Civil War. The editors of Harper's Weekly even printed an article saying Lamar Fontaine did not write that poem. He stole it, and John Hill Hewitt set it to music, and Fontaine had no right to do that. Nobody paid any attention to that article. Up north, two other guys knew that Lamar Fontaine had stolen that, so they went ahead and stole Hewitt's melody as well. They called their song "The Picket Guard," and they took credit for it. In 1867, the editors of Harper's Weekly realized how much royalty money that Ethel Lynn Beers was not receiving because of these four gentlemen. They encouraged her to haul all four of them into federal court, which she did in 1867. She sued them for the very first copyright infringement lawsuit in the history of the music business, and she won it. That led to the 1870 Copyright Act passed by the United States Congress that actually put weight and value into a copyright for anything written or printed in this country. In the 1870s, Ethel's works continued to be very, very popular. She was approached by several publishers. "Let's put all of your work together in a book form so everybody can just buy it and they can read everything you've done." And she said, "No, I'm a very superstitious person. I've always had a premonition that if we do that, I'll suffer an early death. I don't want to do it." And this went on for quite a few years. Finally, she gave up. She relented. They went ahead and published her book. It was called "All Quiet Along the Potomac Tonight," still available in print on Amazon.com. You can look that up after the program. The book was published and printed and released on October 10th, 1879. Ethel dropped dead the next day at the age of 52 on October 11th, 1879. So when somebody tells you something like that, you should pay close attention to it. So, this is "All Quiet Along the Potomac Tonight." It tells the story of the young picket along the Potomac River.
All quiet along the Potomac, they say, except now and then a stray picket is shot as he walks on his beat to and fro by a rifleman hid in the thicket. 'Tis nothing private or two now and then, no account in the news of a battle, not an officer lost, only one of the men moaning out all alone, a death rattle. All quiet along the Potomac tonight, all quiet along the Potomac tonight, where the soldiers lie peacefully dreaming, and the tents in the rays of a clear autumn moon, and the lights of the campfires are gleaming. There's only the sound of that lone sentry's tread as he tramps from the rock to the fountain, and he thinks of his two on the low trundle bed, far away on a cot in the mountain. Dark and grim, grows gentle with memory tender, as he mutters a prayer for his children asleep, and their mother, may heaven defend her. The moon seemed to shine as brightly as then, that night with a love yet unspoken, crept up to his lips, and with low murmured vow, was pledged to be ever off. Tears that are welling, and he gathers his gun close up to its place as if to keep down his heart swelling. He passes the fountain, that blasted pine tree, and his footstep is lagging and weary, but onward he goes through the
February of 1862, Abraham and Mary Lincoln suffered the loss of their son, Willie. He died at the White House of typhoid fever. At the same time, a young lady by the name of Adelina Patti was giving a concert in Baltimore, Maryland. Adelina Patti was born in Madrid, Spain in 1843 into a very musical family. Her father, by the time she was the age of six, realized she had an incredible vocal talent. They moved to New York City, where she received training. At the age of 16, she was a member of the New York Opera Company. By the time she was 18 years old, she was giving tours across the United States. In February of 1862, in Baltimore, Maryland, she was contacted by the White House. They asked her if she and her piano player could come to the White House and do a very intimate private concert for Abraham and Mary Lincoln to try to raise their spirits. She very quickly agreed to do so. Mary Lincoln had purchased a concert grand piano for the White House when the Lincolns moved in, thinking that her children would take lessons on it. I don't know much about that piano other than the fact that anybody that ever played it said it was always out of tune. But anyway, Adelina Patti, her piano player, arrived there the very tail end of February 1862, and they give a very private concert for Abraham and Mary Lincoln. At the end of the concert, Lincoln asked Adelina Patti if she knew the song Home Sweet Home, written by John Howard Payne in 1823 as part of an opera called Clary. The opera Clary was not popular, but the tune Home Sweet Home by 1850 was a worldwide hit. By the time the Civil War began, it was one of the most popular melancholy ballads in the United States. She said, of course she knew it, they had the sheet music to it, and she would be very happy to do it for Abraham and Mary Lincoln, and she did so. It moved the Lincolns to tears, it moved her to tears. It was such a powerful moment. She would use John Howard Payne's Home Sweet Home to close all of her concerts for the rest of her career. Now, at that time, she was in her early 20s, or just about to turn 20. She was married to a guy that was supposedly her manager, and he was just basically wasting all of her money. She got rid of him, married another guy, but she became her own manager. By the 1880s, Adelina Patti was one of the most popular sopranos in the entire world. She did concerts all over the globe, and the deal was you give her $5,000 in gold up front. Your orchestra has to know all of her material. She may rehearse with you, and she may not. By 1890, she was one of the richest women in the world. She had citizenship in five different countries. She settled in Wales, where she built a huge estate in the country. It was more like a castle. It had its own auditorium, and she invited performers from around the world to come to Wales and perform at her home. She would record 32 songs for Gramophone Records in 1900. Home Sweet Home was included on that. They are on CD today. You can buy those on Amazon.com. Check that after the program, and you can hear her version of John Howard Payne's Home Sweet Home. She would give her final concert in 1917 for the International Red Cross for British troops. She passed away in 1919. One other person that she had contact with when Buffalo Bill's Wild West show went to Europe, she actually coached a very young Annie Oakley on her career and told her what to watch out for when she was dealing with unscrupulous males who wanted all of her money. So, this is our version of John Howard Payne's Home Sweet Home. I will not be singing it opera style. I don't want to disappoint anybody. One of the most popular songs of the American Civil War. And I always wondered how many times the third verse of this song was written into a letter home by some very, very homesick, heartsick young soldier.
Mid pleasures and palaces, so humble, there's no place like home. A charm from the sky seems to hallow us there, which seek through the world was ne'er met with elsewhere. Home, home, sweet, sweet. The birds singing gaily,
Thank you. Thank you. This next tune has got a really, really wonderful story to it. This song was written by a woman born in 1797. Her name was Isabella Bomfrey. She was born in upstate New York, and Isabella was born a slave. She was one of a family of 13 slaves owned by a Dutch farmer. She grew up speaking Dutch. The state of New York did not introduce legislation to ban slavery until 1804, and it would take them quite a while after that to finally get rid of it altogether. By the time Isabella was in her early teens, she had been bought and sold four times. She had married another slave. By the time she was 23, she had given birth to three children. The last was a little boy born in 1820, and she was owned by a very, very nasty individual. By that time, New York had banned any kind of slave sales or auctions. In 1826, her little boy was taken away from her and sold at a slave auction and taken to the state of Mississippi. With the help of Quaker abolitionists, she and her family escaped from this guy, and they stayed in hiding until July 4, 1827, when New York finally abolished slavery in the state of New York. She made national headlines in 1828. Again, with the help of Quaker abolitionists, she filed a federal lawsuit against her former owner and the gentleman, the guy that had purchased her little boy at that slave auction. She got her son back in 1828. That was the first time her name would appear in papers nationwide. In 1843, she attended a Methodist church service. It was more like a revival. She had a very powerful epiphany that evening, and she changed her name to Sojourner Truth. And she would pledge the rest of her life to the abolition of slavery and to women's rights across this country. In 1851, she was invited to a women's convention in Akron, Ohio, where she gave a speech called "Ain't I a Woman?" And that speech was printed in newspapers again. She made national headlines, and it went coast to coast. By the time the Civil War began, two of her sons had enlisted in the Union Army in 1863 after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. By that time, she and her husband were living in Michigan, and she pledged herself to help raise regiments of African American troops known as the United States Colored Troops because of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. She decided she wanted to write a marching tune for them. The melody of this next song had become very, very popular in late 1862. Sojourner Truth was still illiterate. She could not read or write, but she dictated her words to somebody that wrote them down. They put them to this melody, and the song was called "The Valiant Soldiers." This would become the most popular marching tune of the United States Colored Troops for the rest of the Civil War. Isabella would remain in Michigan. After the war, she pledged her life to civil rights, women's rights across this country. She passed away in Battle Creek, Michigan in 1884. Lisa and I visited her grave last year. We sang this song to her. So this is "The Valiant Soldiers," written by Isabella Bomfrey, better known as Sojourner Truth.
We are the valiant soldiers who have listed for the war. We're fighting for the Union and we're fighting for the law. We'll shoot a rebel farther than the white man ever saw as we go marching on. Look there above the center where the flag is waving bright. We're marching out of slavery, we're bound for freedom's light. We mean to show Jeff Davis how the Africans can fight as we go marching on. Soldiers now, as sure as you are born, when master hears us calling, he'll think it's Gabriel's horn as we go marching on. Father Abraham has spoken and the message has been sent. The prison doors open and out the prisoners went to join the Union Army of the African descent as we go marching on.
Thank you.
Thank you. This next tune was by far the most popular love song of the American Civil War, hands down. There was no challenge to that, North or South. Very, very, very popular tune. And anything that good had to come out of the great state of Ohio. The song was written by a young lady from Muskingum County. Her name was
Martha Ellen Bloxham.
Thank you. My bass player cued me. Martha Ellen Bloxham, born in 1828 into a very wealthy family in Muskingum County. She was a college graduate by 1850. She moved in with her sister and brother-in-law in their beautiful home overlooking the Muskingum River, just north of Zanesville at a point on the river called Hamline Hill. At the bottom of Hamline Hill, they built a new Unitarian church. The new Unitarian church had a brand new preacher, a young man by the name of Henry de Lafayette Webster, born in 1826. Henry was nowhere near as wealthy as Martha, but Martha was interested in the Unitarian denomination, so she joined the congregation. She and Henry became attracted to each other, and they began courting. Now, Henry knew that if he was going to marry this very wealthy young Victorian woman, somehow or another, he had better become a very wealthy young Victorian man. So he promised Martha that his congregation would grow very quickly. In a year or so, they'd have plenty of money, they'd get married, settle down, and start a family. A year and a half later, the congregation was exactly the same size. Martha's family sat her down and said, Henry just isn't going to amount to much, and you need to move on. She did so very quickly. She broke off the courtship and broke Henry's heart. 6 years later, still missing Martha, still pastor of that church, he wanted to write a beautiful poem about their unrequited love and how her family had pulled them apart. He was going to print that poem in the church newsletter. So he wrote it, but he didn't want anybody to know how bad he still missed Martha. So he entitled his beautiful poem, Bertha. You can't make this stuff up. The poem Bertha was indeed printed. It was noticed by an up-and-coming songwriter by the name of Joseph Philbrick Webster, no relation to the preacher. He told the preacher this would make a great love, beautiful love song, but the name Bertha's got to go. The preacher said, you can't use Martha, I don't care what name you do use. It was J.P. Webster that came up with the name Lorena, and Lorena was published in 1858. It was not only the most popular love song of the American Civil War, it was one of the most popular songs of the entire 19th century. Thousands of little girls got named Lorena because of this tune. Now, to let you know what happened to everybody, the preacher moved on. He served all 4 years in the Union Army, wound up in Chicago as a pastor of a large church, did very well for himself, passed away in 1896. Joseph Webster wrote a song called In the Sweet By and By in 1863, his biggest hit. He also wrote a song for the Carter family. It will become their very best-selling record. He died in 1875. Martha moved on, found a very wealthy young attorney to marry. His name was William Johnston. He became a Supreme Court Justice for the state of Ohio. Mr. Johnston died March 2, 1879. Martha outlived everybody. She died March 3, 1917, at the age of 89. She is buried in Ironton, Ohio. On our third date, we went down, found her grave. I got my Martin guitar out and sang Lorena to Martha Ellen Bloxham or Martha Ellen Johnson, and she married me anyway.
I did.
I also found out how much Martha hated this song. So, a couple of verses of Lorena, the most popular love song of the Civil War.
The years creep slowly by, Lorena. The snow is on the grass again. The sun's low down the sky, Lorena. The frost
you. This next tune is by far one of the most popular and most recognized songs that we do. A very, very huge hit during the American Civil War. After the Battle of Gettysburg, the fall of Vicksburg on July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, a lot of people, North and South, thought the war could possibly be coming to an end. A young lady living in Boston, Massachusetts was 18-year-old Annie Gilmore. Annie was engaged to Captain John O'Rourke of the Union Army. Annie's older brother, Patrick, was the bandmaster for all the regimental bands from the state of Massachusetts. Very well-known brass band arranger, conductor, horn player himself, and songwriter. She truly thought that the war was going to be over any day in July of 1863. She went to Patrick and said, write a song for John when he comes home from the war. These people were Irish immigrants who had come to the United States in 1851, and Patrick Gilmore possessed a very good knowledge of Irish ballads. He selected one called Johnny We Hardly Knew Ya. He took the melody to that, changed it just a bit, changed the words, and wrote a song called When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again. Published September 23rd, 1863, it would become one of the most popular songs of the Civil War, North and South. The Southern soldiers were called Johnny Rebs, we were called Billy Yanks. So they thought the song was written for them as well. By the end of the war, it was very popular North and South. Annie and John finally got married 12 years later. I don't know what this guy's problem was. They settled in Plattsburgh, Nebraska, where John served in local politics and was the postmaster. They never had any children. The home they lived in today is on the National Register of Historic Places as the home of the couple that inspired this famous Civil War song. You hit that minor chord and everybody thinks a bad guy just walked into the saloon,
minor chord,
you know.
Minor chord.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah! Give him a hearty welcome and hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out. We'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. The old church bell will peal with joy, hurrah, hurrah. To welcome home our darling boy, hurrah, hurrah. The village lads and lassies say, with roses they will strew the way. We'll all feel gay. Marching home. The love and friendship on that day, hurrah, hurrah. Choicest pleasures then display, hurrah, hurrah. And let each one perform some part to fill with joy the warrior's heart. We'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more song selected. We actually have about 13 or 14 songs in this presentation, but if we did the whole thing, we'd have to send out for pizza and hire another cameraman. So we're just kind of shortening things up. We're going to take some questions after we get done with this next tune, if anybody has any, or if you have a request for another song. We know about another 80. But this next tune by far is the most popular song of the American Civil War. Started out as a Methodist hymn known as Brothers, Will You Meet Us on Canaan's Happy Shores. Very, very simple song to learn. It had one line in each verse. It was what they called a camp meeting song where the minister sang a line, the congregation sang it back to him. The song became very, very popular in the United States by the middle of the 19th century. By the 1850s, just about everybody had heard Brothers, Will You Meet Us on Canaan's Happy Shores. The 13th Volunteer Massachusetts had a young private in it by the name of John Brown. John had the distinction of being the worst soldier in the entire regiment. He didn't know left from right. He couldn't remember the order of arms. The men took Brothers, Will You Meet Us and invented what they called the John Brown song. They found out it was great to march and drill to. They wound up in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1861. People heard them singing John Brown this and John Brown that. They thought they were singing about John Brown the abolitionist, who of course had raided Harper's Ferry unsuccessfully in October of 1859. They added verses about him as well. The song was published as Glory Hallelujah. Patrick Gilmore wrote the arrangement for it. It came out in sheet music form in the fall of 1861. Better known to the Union Army as John Brown's Body, it would become the most popular marching tune of the American Civil War for the Union soldiers. Julia Ward Howe was born in 1819 in New York City into a very wealthy family. She was a published author by the time she was 18. She had received a very exclusive private education. She married a doctor 20 years her senior by the name of Samuel Gridley Howell. The war began, Dr. Howell started the United States Sanitation Commission. Their job was to do camp inspections to ensure soldiers were practicing good hygiene to try to curb disease at that time. Julia would join her husband on November 16, 1861 in Washington to do a camp inspection. As they were doing it, a company of men marched by the group doing the inspection, singing, "John Brown's body lies moldering in the grave." And a friend of hers leaned over and said, "That song is really disgusting. You could do a much better job with that." The next morning in 20 minutes, she wrote a poem she called The Battle Hymn of the Republic. She sold it to Atlantic Monthly newspaper in February of 1862 for $5. Patrick Gilmore again wrote the arrangement for it. It came out in sheet music form in the fall of 1862. And it very quickly became one of the most popular songs ever written, not just of the Civil War, but just ever, simply ever written. After the war, Julia Ward Howe's husband would pass away in 1876. She would take his place at a large number of meetings. In 1880, she started the first women's newspaper in the United States. She was editor to that and a contributing writer to that for well over 20 years. In 1885, she approached the United States Congress with the idea for making a Mother's Day holiday in the United States. They thought that was a crazy idea. Right after the turn of the 20th century, somebody else approached them. They thought it was a great idea. But we're going to give Julia Ward credit for having Mother's Day as a national holiday today in our country. In 1893, she started the League of Women's Clubs. So ladies, if you've ever belonged to a women's club, you can thank Julia Ward Howe for that as well. Very, very powerful lady, somebody that I truly admire. I've read a tremendous amount about her, and I could talk probably for an hour on Julia Ward Howe alone. Twist of the story, Julia Ward Howe's husband was one of the six men that financed the John Brown raid on Harper's Ferry. After he died in 1876, she attended all the meetings of the Secret Six. They met every October 16th, and she died in October of 1910, just after attending that meeting. 4,000 people sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic at her funeral that day. We're going to ask you all to join in and sing along on this tune. If you don't know, we're going to do three of the five verses. We don't know which three. If you don't know the verses, join us on the chorus. If you don't know the chorus, make some words up. Lisa will tell you I do that all the time.
Please,
and we want
along.
To thank all of you for coming
yes,
out today, joining
much.
Us here in our great. Beautiful Ohio State House. I want to thank Mike, Katie, Dana, Josh, our crew from the Ohio channel there. Just wonderful to be here. The Battle Hymn of the Republic by Julia Ward Howe.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. Hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth. Shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before the judgment seat. Be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea, with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. He died to make men holy. Let us fight to make men free, while God is marching on.
God bless America.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
you.
Anybody have any questions, any requests?
No.
Thank you.
We do have one.
No lunch for you today.
See.
So you've mentioned you've studied these women who are very successful over the past. What lessons do you learn from them that would be applicable to people today?
Well, I think one of the things that I learned as I got into this and really began looking at a lot of the women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Mary Walker, Clara Barton, all of these women played such a powerful role. Pauline Cushman, Mother Bickerdike, Mary Ball Bickerdike, probably a distant relative of mine. One thing about women, in the 1830s, 1840s, 1850s, a lot of places women were not allowed to hold a job. They were not allowed to serve on a jury. They were not allowed to buy land. They were not allowed to own a home. It was just incredible how restricted they were. And by just the latter part of the 19th century, how much progress they had made. And of course, one of the biggest issues was the right to vote. And that wasn't settled until 1920. So our country dragged its feet. England did not give women the right to vote until 1929. So it was just repressive attitude toward them all across the globe. And that was one of the things that truly opened my eyes. All the women we just talked about, none of them ever got to cast a vote legally any time in their life. So that was one of the things that really opened my eyes to the whole thing. Also, the way music changed. Stephen Foster was probably the leader in writing what they called parlor songs, what we would call a ballad today. And he was one of the people that truly incorporated women into those songs. He wrote Nellie Was a Lady, I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, Gentle Annie, Beautiful Dreamer. You know, all of these were inspired by women. And Foster was a leader in that particular movement in music in the 1850s. So that was one of the things I really got my eyes open to and learned about when we put this program together.
One thing that inspired me was the strength of these women that really weren't in the forefront. They had a message, and so they made sure, especially for Sojourner Truth. I mean, she battled a lot of things personally and privately, and yet she was able to help, you know, write a song for the colored troops. So I admire the strength of these women even back then.
Right, right. And that was a surprise, too. I have heard The Valiant Soldiers and learned about her, but I didn't realize her background. I didn't realize she wasn't born Sojourner Truth. And when we learned about that, that was an eye-opener as well. And that's one of my absolute favorite stories to tell in this program.
Yeah. Any other questions? Requests?
Well, do you do songs from the Confederate side as well, not just Union?
Pardon me?
Do you do songs from the Confederate side, not just Union?
That's correct.
The Confederate women were just as busy as the women up north were.
Yeah.
They had all kinds of drives across the South, of course, to get supplies, to send clothing to the Confederate soldiers. The Confederate Army was always short on everything. And the women of the Confederacy probably stepped up and did more for them than anybody else. Their ports were all blockaded. They couldn't import anything. But it was the women of the Confederacy after the Civil War that developed the Daughters of the Confederacy. And the Daughters of the Confederacy became a very, very powerful women's group by the turn of the 20th century. They were responsible for raising all the money that went up to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and disinterred all the Confederate soldiers buried on that battlefield and took them back down south. And that went on all the way through the 1870s. It wasn't just for a very short period of time. They would have fundraising drives and they would raise enough money, they would go back to Gettysburg and disinter those men. They didn't want them buried on northern soil. There are still a tremendous number of Confederate soldiers buried on the Gettysburg battlefield that nobody knows where they are. But they were very, very responsible for that particular movement. The Daughters of the Confederacy is alive and well. We are going to be playing for their State of Ohio banquet this September. So that is a very powerful organization still today. And of course, there is the Sons of Confederate Veterans that have nearly 60,000 members nationwide. I'm a member of the Sons of Union Veterans. We have about 6,800. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting how that Southern culture has stayed alive so powerfully over the last 160 years. Anything else? We've got time for another song. We all done?
Do you guys want one more song?
Sure.
Do you have a request, a genre, or I mean, you want a marching song, a love song, sad war song? We've got them all. Any marching song? Okay. Battle cry for you.
Sure.
We'll do Battle Cry of Freedom, if you've recognized that.
This was by far probably one of the most popular Union marching songs of the Civil War. It was written by George Root of Chicago, Illinois. George Root was a very well-known composer and arranger. He owned Root and Cady Publishing that published sheet music in Chicago. He was very, very powerful in the American music scene at the outbreak of the Civil War. The Civil War would truly make his career. He would write The Battle Cry of Freedom, The Vacant Chair, Just Before the Battle Mother, Tramp, 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 or just a handful of songs that he wrote that became very popular. He was also very well known for a program he developed to teach blind children music during the 1850s. But in 1861, inspired by Lincoln's call for 300,000 more volunteers in July, he was inspired by that and he wrote a song called The Battle Cry of Freedom. He pitched it to a glee club in Chicago. They actually performed it on the sidewalk in downtown Chicago, and all the members of that glee club had enlisted in a Illinois regiment. So they took that song with them when they went ahead and joined the Union Army, and this song spread like wildfire throughout the Union Army and stayed very, very popular. You still hear a lot of military bands play this tune today. The Battle Cry of Freedom. And George Root was very opposed to slavery himself. At that time, the American Civil War was thought to be all about states' rights, but Root included slavery in the third verse of this tune. The Battle Cry of Freedom, to wrap things up today.
Yes, we'll rally around the flag, boys, we'll rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom. We'll gather from the hillside and we'll rally on the plain, shouting the battle cry of freedom. The Union forever, hurrah, boys, hurrah. Down with the traitor and up with the star. While we rally round the flag, boys, rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom. We are marching to the call of our brothers gone before, shouting the battle cry of freedom. We'll fill the vacant ranks with 300,000 more, shouting the battle cry of freedom. The Union forever, hurrah, boys, hurrah. Down with the traitor and up with the star. While we rally round the flag, boys, rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom. We will welcome to our numbers the loyal, true, and brave, shouting the battle cry of freedom. Although we may be poor, not a man will be a slave, shouting the battle cry of freedom. The Union forever, and up with the star. While we rally round the flag, boys, rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Once again, thank you all for joining us today. And let's have one more round of applause for Steve and Lisa and their performance today. We hope to see you at future programs here at the State House, which you can find online on the State House's website, which is just ohiostatehouse.org. We also have public tours available 7 days a week, and our State House Museum on the ground floor of the building is also open 7 days a week. And as we mentioned, on April 29th, we will have a Civil War encampment here. We'll have the Repose of Lincoln. Steve and Lisa will be back as part of the repose and the encampment as well. And so we hope to see you on April 29th or any of those events that we have coming up. Thank you all so much for coming today. Yes.